This is Fresh Air. I'm Amy Sallet. Some of the wounds of war are mental, not physical. Ray Scurfield works with war's psychological casualties. He's a psychiatric social worker at a Veterans Administration hospital. In 1968, Scurfield was in Vietnam, treating soldiers in an Army field hospital. During that war, there was little idea there would be a delayed psychological impact from the trauma of combat. Now we know thousands of vets are suffering from what has come to be called post-traumatic stress disorder. Scurfield runs a clinic for vets at the American Lake VA Medical Center in Tacoma, Washington. He's also been working with other health professionals at VA hospitals around the country to prepare them for the types of psychological problems they may end up treating as a result of the war in the Gulf. Earlier this week, Terry Gross spoke with Ray Scurfield about his work in Vietnam.
Can you describe some of the typical psychiatric problems that you saw?
Approximately 90% of the vets that we saw were from support troops, and about 10% were from combat troops or frontline troops, and that was roughly proportionate to the percentages of combat and support troops in country. So that meant that whether a vet was serving in a, in a direct combat role or in a combat support role, they were essentially equally likely or unlikely to become a psych casualty. So with that caveat, basically we saw a full range. Number one, of course, was primarily people who would be very anxious for a variety of reasons. The anxiety might be to the point where they were literally unable to sleep, where they were having very intrusive sleep disturbance, nightmares, for example. Sometimes there would be a reaction to the loss of a friend, and then many issues out of that. Another category would be veterans who had somewhat gone over the edge. They had kind of become kill crazy. They had gotten to the point where they had a hard time discriminating friendlies from the enemy. They were rather, let's say, saturated sometimes with issues of get back, vengeance. They had lost a lot of people, and they had been out there for such a long time that they seemed to just kind of waver between really being in touch with the reality of what was going on and being in somewhat of a fantasy world that was sometimes not in touch with reality. All the vets oftentimes had these problems exacerbated by problems happening at home. Some vets would get a Dear John letter. Their wife or their old lady wrote and said that she was involved with somebody else, or she was getting a divorce, or there was a death of perhaps someone in the family that was very close to the vet. Sometimes these kinds of events happening back home would upset the equilibrium that the vet in the war zone had been able to establish.
What were your options when someone was sent to you?
Basically, we had 30 days to make a disposition. We would try to treat them, which oftentimes consisted of a lot of sleep and rest and a chance to ventilate, talk a little bit, get stabilized, sometimes use some medications like for sleeping or anti-anxiety, and then if it was felt that they could handle it, they would be definitely sent back to their actual duty station that they had been evacuated from. The second choice was to feel that someone couldn't maybe make it back in their regular duty station, but they could make it somewhere else in country, so they'd be reassigned to another and probably a different type of job in country. And then the third choice was to actually medevac them out of the war zone.
It seems that someone in your position would be in a kind of odd role. You know, as the representative of the military, I suppose you should try to get somebody ready to go back into combat. But as the soldier's doctor, you would want to, for his own mental health, probably send him home to his family and friends as soon as possible. So it seems like a really difficult position to be in.
It was a very bizarre position to be in, particularly since most of us in the medical capacity in our unit were not career military. I likened it to the sort of a catch-22 dilemma of trying to decide if someone was too crazy to go back to combat or too sane to be evacuated to the United States, and certainly issues of what was best for the individual, what was best for the unit, were very complex. One example of that is that there was a belief at the time that if you, quote, prematurely evacuated somebody out of country, that there may well be a fixation of their symptoms, that essentially they would become entrenched in whatever pathological state they were in, and that would be exacerbated by being removed from the war zone, and that issues such as guilt and shame and so forth would just compound the problem. So the prevailing wisdom, quote-unquote, at the time was that it was always much healthier for the veteran if it were possible for the veteran to return to duty and sort of work through and fight through the psychological issues so they could have, quote, a successful completion of their tour. And that was the mindset that we had been sort of given while we were there.
That's not really believed anymore?
Well, yes and no. Ironically, what we have come to learn is that the principles that were utilized, which was treat as close to the front line as possible, tell them that this is a temporary problem and they will soon be back to their pre-trauma state and that they have to go back to their duty station, that those principles actually did wonders for reducing the acute psychiatric casualty rate while guys were in country. In other words, it seemed to help them put a lid on the issues while they were there, and as a result, there were dramatically fewer acute psych casualties in Vietnam in contrast to Korea, and dramatically less in Korea in contrast to World War II. However, what this totally ignored was, of course, the chronic or delayed legacy that might occur. And that, of course, particularly out of the Vietnam War, is what we now have been faced with over the last 20 years.
You know, you had mentioned Catch-22 before, and it seems to me another Catch-22 predicament you must have felt in is that, well, it's kind of normal to go crazy in combat. So if you're crazy, well, then you're really just normal, and you should go back into combat again.
That's very much it. Viktor Frankl, who survived the concentration camps and wrote Man's Search for Meaning, has a quote that I find quite apropos. An abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is normal behavior. And it was that irony, if you will, that was such an exquisitely profound dilemma that we were in. And sometimes you'd worry about the person who wasn't having a reaction.
Did you feel guilt sometimes when you'd send somebody back into combat?
Well, we would feel guilt. Definitely I would feel guilt. However, the other side of it, again, was this thing that it was drilled into us that nothing was more dangerous to a unit than a new guy. And if the choice were evacuate somebody out of country and no one would have to take his place, then I think, the decision would have been a lot simpler. But when we kept thinking about who would fill the void, it became a question of the fates of two people at that point, at least. And that was just a rationale that we used for not feeling as guilty as we might have.
When you had to decide whether to send someone back into combat or not, was one of the premises you were supposed to work under that getting back into combat was like falling off a horse? The sooner you got back on, the healthier you'd be?
Exactly. Not so much the healthier you'd be, but the idea being that once you fell off the horse and were traumatized, if you never got back on a horse again, you would literally be preoccupied with the fact that you fell off the horse. You would kind of be in a frozen state of anxiety and fear, terror, if you will, about what had happened, and you were essentially bound, almost bound to that kind of an emotional state over something that you in no way would go back and face again. So obviously, again, if you can go back and face it and persevere, theoretically, you'd be able to transcend the trauma and come out of it, if not a better person, at least where you had some degree of mastery over something that you had felt you had been too weak for.
Do you believe that now?
I think there's a lot of virtue to that in and of itself. The problem is that, of course, when you're going back, you are facing many other traumas.
You are now working at a Veterans Administration hospital, and you treat a lot of veterans who have post-traumatic stress problems. Has what you've seen in the past few years treating veterans made you rethink any of the premises that you worked under when you were in Vietnam?
Well, definitely. I need to first say that the vast majority of vets that we see in hospitals and clinics today who are still having problems from Vietnam or Korea or World War II or Panama or Grenada never saw a psychiatric personnel of any type when they were on active duty. None. Never did. So I think all these fine principles about military psychiatry may only apply to those who a psychiatrist or a psychiatric personnel actually see, which is a very small percentage. One thing that was quite clear that I have learned over the years, as have many other people, is that there was never a discussion or even a thought during the Vietnam War that I can remember that there was any concern about chronic or delayed post-traumatic stress disorder or anything like that. The only concern was if you prematurely evacuated somebody out of country, then they might have a chronic mental condition, but there was no thought that people could be literally essentially storing away, stuffing many issues that would come back to haunt them years down the road. So that is something that became quite clear after the Vietnam War, and with all of the World War II and Korean vets that we've seen, quite clearly that happens with survivors of trauma.
We'll continue Terry's conversation with Ray Scurfield after a short break. Scurfield directs a post-traumatic stress treatment program at the American Lake VA Medical Center in Tacoma, Washington. This is Fresh Air.
How seriously is post-traumatic stress being taken now, and how seriously is it being taken now in making preparations for the ground war in the Gulf?
Well, I think that there definitely have been a lot of non-believers and skeptics about the issue of post-traumatic stress disorder, and this has continued, I think, as a major problem until relatively recent times, the last few years, where there's been somewhat, I think, there's been a gradual change, and it's been more of a change recently. However, it tends to be very much focused on what do we do to conserve the fighting strength. That's the military medical mission. And so really, once the thoughts are all around what you do to make sure they can function while on active duty, they still have this discharge from active duty, and then they're out there in the world. And the transition, particularly when they have not been identified as having psychiatric problems, and a lot of them who have psychiatric problems will never identify to the military because they would be very worried that this might come back to haunt them as far as the type of discharge they would get, whether they would get in trouble with their unit commanders, and whether it would hurt their career. And so a lot of active duty soldiers and their families are afraid to go to military mental health personnel. And part of that may be perceptual on their part, and part of it may have a reality basis.
Do you think that the psychiatrists and psychiatric social workers in the Gulf will be operating on a very different set of premises than the ones you operated under when you were in Vietnam?
I'm not really sure about that. I think that from what I can see, the military psychiatry principles of proximity, immediacy, expectancy, and simplicity, which are very much the ones that are going to be operating now. I'm also not clear that that the mental health personnel in the various branches of the service all have an equal understanding and training in this. So I guess I would say I think it's going to be very spotty. I think you're going to have some mental health personnel who are much more understanding about this and some who are not. And you're going to have some unit commanders that are perhaps a little more aware of this and a number who don't believe in it even today.
There are some problems that troops in the Gulf are going to face that are very different from ones that they faced in Vietnam. And I wonder what you think some of those unique problems might be.
Well, I think that there is an area where I would see a major difference, and that, of course, has to do with Reserve and National Guard folks. And there are exceptions, but a large number, from my experience, had no intention of ever going into war. They were quite content, if you will, being weekend warriors, and I'm not using that term disparagingly, but spending one weekend a month, contributing something to their country and moving on with their life. And I think that for a number of them, quite clearly, this war caught them very unprepared. A lot of them were called to active duty in remarkably short periods of time. There has been great, fracturing of families and careers. We have a much higher percentage, I think, of such active duty who are older, who had formed families, where I think the disruption is of a whole different nature than if you're an 18 or 19-year-old. And I'm not saying it's any worse, it's just quite different. And the fallout of that, I think, is really going to hit home, not while the war's being fought, but when these troops start coming back, many of whom are going to get decorated for being very brave and for what they did during the war, and they're going to come back and be told, we don't need you on active duty anymore. And a lot of them are going to come back to, I think, some very stressed and somewhat dysfunctional family and career situations. There is one other major change, of course, which I'm hoping is for the betterment, and that is the fact that everyone is now talking about, let's don't mix up the warrior with the war like we did in Vietnam.
Right.
And if we don't agree with the administration's war policy, let's at least support our troops. And I think, I mean, that's wonderful in that regard. However, with that also, I think that's a very short-term kind of a support our troops. I'm worried that that the longer-term support for the legacy of war that goes on 10 and 20 and 30 years later is may not be there.
I'm wondering how the war in the Gulf is affecting the veterans who you're seeing with post-traumatic stress problems.
There's been a remarkable turbulence that has shot through, if you will, the veteran patient community that I'm aware of. Many veterans are having their own memories from the war that they were in being triggered by this war. And that's not just Vietnam, but certainly the Vietnam vets that we see particularly. And there's just the range includes vets who are essentially addicted to the TV and have the adrenaline running, and part of them wants to go to the war zone and wants to fight, and part of them realizes that's crazy, and they're afraid and they're angry, and there's a feeling of helplessness. You have this whole range of responses, guys going into crises and thinking that they had taken care of their war issues, and all of a sudden, here they are again. Oh, there is one more major reaction that's going on, and that's sort of like a worry that current veterans are going to be disenfranchised. And Vietnam veterans and other veterans are now worrying that there's going to be a new priority, which there is going to be, on this new population of veterans, and that as the totem pole at the low end of the pecking order goes, the veterans from previous wars are going to be put on the back burner, and resources will be dedicated to the new ones. So there's a real fear of abandonment, and a lot of these vets felt abandoned by our country and our government before, and they're starting to feel it again.
What are you preparing yourself for now mentally in terms of receiving casualties from the Gulf War?
Well, I was depressed for quite a while, and I was denying that this was going to happen, and that went on for a few months, and I guess in December it started becoming a reality to me when I got involved in these trainings and in heavier, greater frequency. And I guess one of the things is we're trying to, in some ways, go on with business as usual and make sure that we don't forget the vets who need our help now, who are here, and that we need to be careful to take care of ourselves and make sure that our staff don't get burned out because, as is usual, we're being asked and demanded to do more with the same amount of resources. And there's a lot of reactions from the current vets, and I guess I'm trying to marshal my thoughts and knowledge that I and others have that we've learned from the previous wars, and hope that that information put down in writing and talked about may make a difference with somebody.
Would you ever want to put yourself back in the position of being near the battlefield and being the person who had to decide whether somebody got sent back to combat or back home?
Well, let's put it this way. That's a position that people are put in. And I guess, quite frankly, I think I'm in a better position to make that kind of a call than a lot of people that I know. And for that reason alone, I would probably lean towards maybe doing that for a while, though I have a lot of personal issues about the war and about war, so it would be a very hard choice for me.
You're consulting with healthcare workers who will be dealing with psychiatric and medical evacuees from the Gulf. What are you telling them?
Basically, I'll be showing some film on how some of our vets are reacting to the war that was taped, that was filmed by local TV. I'll be showing them some war scenes because the terror of what these evacuees have recently experienced, I think, is very important to understand, and the tendency for the veteran to and the staff member to want to deny the emotional turmoil that's going on and, let's say, only focus on the fact that someone's wounded physically. That's the tendency, and it makes it so easy for no one to deal with the emotional side. And I'm going to be exhorting people to that they have to move beyond that, and they have to be making human connections with these folks who are coming back, even if those folks coming back are saying, I don't want the connection. You have to reach out. You have to try to break through the denial.
Ray Scurfield, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
You're welcome.
Ray Scurfield spoke with Terry Gross. He's the director of a post-traumatic stress treatment program at a Veterans Administration Medical Center in Tacoma, Washington. I'm Amy Sallet, and this is Fresh Air.